Hello and welcome to the Escape from Cubicle Nation podcast. This is Pamela Slim, and I am really delighted today to welcome Derek Sivers. Welcome, Derek.
Thanks, Pam. Hi.
And Derek is the founder of CD Baby and just released a really lovely book called Anything You Want, 40 Lessons for a New Kind of Entrepreneur. And I got it surprisingly in an envelope from my friends at the Domino Project. And as soon as I opened it, I smiled widely, first of all, at the picture on the cover, which you're going to have to see for yourself. It just makes you smile widely. Mm-hmm. And I also really smiled because I thought it contains a lot of very, very practical advice and some of it contrarian to what you hear about starting a business that's going to be really useful for the Escape from Cubicle Nation audience. So, Derek, for those people who don't know you, can you give a little bit of your story as it pertains to what led up to and then the founding of CD Baby?
Oh, sure, yeah. I was a musician my whole life. In fact, I decided when I was 14, I was not just into music, I was fiercely determined to be a professional musician when I was 14. And deciding that, it's kind of like deciding to be an entrepreneur. You know, what's funny is that years later, people would say things like, how did you get the courage to quit your day job? And I was like, that wasn't courage. That was like an old decision. It's like when you decide you want to be a musician, that means no salary, no health care, no pension, no security. To be a musician is to be an entrepreneur. So it's like, I guess I was already in that mindset. But I was really just, from the age of 14 up until 28, 29, I was just a musician. So last time I had a job was 1992. I quit my last job in 1992, and I was just a professional musician. Then in, 1997, I was selling my own CD. And to understand the situation at the time, there was no PayPal. Amazon was still just a bookstore. So if you were a musician, there was absolutely nowhere to sell your CD. Unless you had a big record deal, there were places like CD Now, where was the big online record store at the time. But as an independent musician with a CD to sell, there was literally no way to sell it online. So CD Baby was really just me setting up a tiny little website to sell my CD. But then my friends asked if I could sell theirs, and that led to the rest.
And for those of you who don't know, the rest of a very strong and successful growth over a period of years. You sold the company, what year did you sell it?
2008.
For around some, the story goes, for about $22 million. And which is, I imagine, one of the reasons why people then flock to you for advice about starting a business. Oh my God, you started this business and you had this huge plan. When I went on Twitter and I said, hey, I'm talking to Derek, does anybody have any questions? And somebody said, well, how extensive was his business plan when he started? And I just laughed after having read your book.
Awesome.
Because how extensive was your business plan when you started?
About as extensive as my grocery list is today. there was no business plan. It's funny, you know, that thing about like once you get some success, everybody wants to know your thoughts. I feel a little bit like, you know, on Tuesday I'm some dork that nobody cares about my thoughts. Then I win the lottery, and the next day people want to know my thoughts on world hunger or whatever, you know. CD Baby was really not a business plan. In fact, to understand the context, I didn't want to start a business because I was a full-time musician. Like, I was living my dream as a musician. I was making my living playing gigs and producing people's records and playing on people's records. Like, I even bought my house in Woodstock, New York with the money I made touring. Like, this was it. To me, this was like the culmination of a musician's dream come true. So when I started this little hobby to help my friends sell their CDs, it was really supposed to be something I do like an hour a day. I didn't want it to get in the way of my music career. So as it grew, I actually not only did I have a plan not only did I not have a plan for growth, I actively didn't want it to grow. I wanted it to stay small so it wouldn't get in the way of my music. So it was kind of a a non-planner, even an anti-plan. It's weird when people ask, so what did you do to grow your business? I was like, I didn't. It just grew anyway.
Well, but part of the theme that I really read in it, because you're right, so much of what you were committed to, as you tell the story in the book, in the early stages, because you were not looking at it as a business or how can I turn a quick buck, was a pretty fierce loyalty toward other musicians that you were doing the work for. It
Yeah.
seemed like to me, you can tell me if this is true or not from your perspective, but really a real focus on the simplicity of what am I really trying to do and how can I just make this absolutely work for the musicians for whom I am doing this.
Yeah. It feels a little bit like, in hindsight, I can say, oh yeah, that's the Tao of business. I feel a little bit like Forrest Gump, meaning like I really was just stumbling through this thing. I can't take much credit. I'm not a brilliant entrepreneur or anything like that. But in 10 years of doing this, I did learn some things. And I do feel that one thing that I learned is that by staying, as you say, like fiercely focused on just helping people, and that's priority number one, and like making money is second, I feel that it actually helps your business more than if making money was your number one priority. Do you know what I mean? That's why it kind of feels like this, the Tao of business, where it's like by focusing on helping people and doing the right thing at all decisions, like every little minute decision you have during the day, always do the thing that's selfless to you and helpful to others. But by doing that, it's actually the best thing you could do for your business.
Exactly, because that was the kind of relationship that you were developing with your customers who were very excited to spread the word and share. And as you said, it wasn't based on listening to some management guru telling you to be customer focused.
Right.
It
Right.
was because it felt like it was the right thing. And I have to say, I was really smiling as I was reading a number of times throughout the book. It actually made me smile quite a bit. You notice the theme in the podcast is a lot of smiling. But one of the things you talked about, I believe in so strongly, and I believe it to my core for myself in my business, and I wish it for every one of my clients, is that if you're not enjoying growing your business and doing your business while you are doing it, what is the point? And over and
Yeah.
over in the book, you kept saying a huge reason to be in business is to be happy while you're doing it. And for you, in many cases, it was learning how to do stuff, sitting in a room and coding, even when that wasn't necessarily your strong set, but you were kind of fascinated by how to make it happen.
Yeah. Sorry if this sounds goofy, but I mean, it applies to so many things in life. It's like how many of us kind of slog off to like somebody's birthday party that we don't really want to go to, but we think we should. And I just have this philosophy in life of that I call it hell yeah or no, which means that if don't ever try to decide between maybe or maybe not. I kind of think of it more black and white. Like if you're feeling hell yeah about something, like absolutely yes, I want to do this. That would be awesome. Then you do it. But if you're feeling anything less than that, then just don't. Like, you don't have to do anything. So it's like, even if there's some birthday party that you don't really want to go to, then just don't do it. And if you've started a business and somebody's telling you that you really need to have like these little legalese and terms and conditions and privacy policy on your site, it's like, no, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. And so I think that you got to keep applying that during many little times in life. Your business doesn't have to be like a normal business just because that's what other people do or that's what somebody's telling you you should do. You don't, there's no like invisible jury of MBAs that you need to impress. You could just do whatever the hell makes you happy.
Right. There's a. I was coached by Martha Beck, who's a woman who's done a lot of writing about your essential self and your social self, are the terms that she uses. So, your essential self is really being in touch with that voice that says it's okay to do whatever the hell you want, right? Despite the imaginary set of MBAs. With a lot of my audience for Escape from Cubicle Nation, the social self has been developed so strongly, especially by for many people living in a corporate environment for many, many years, where you're conditioned by virtue of corporate life to absolutely shut down your essential self voice. So I know for maybe because of having that connection with owning being a musician, not necessarily doing it for money, and maybe by virtue of design of who you are as a human being, I'm not sure. That sounds like that essential self voice was strong, and you listened to it. Were you supported in that? I'm curious, by friends, family, others, or did you get resistance?
I think no matter what choices you make in life, somebody's going to be there telling you that you're wrong, no matter what it is. So, maybe some of your listeners are fiercely focused on money. And if that's like their focus, then I say, great, okay, cool, then just admit it. I think whatever it is, admit it. So here's another example, I think. If you've ever been to New York City, you see the word Trump 100 times. It's like all around town. It's like Trump Plaza, Trump Towers, Trump something, Trump this. I even drove 2 hours upstate from New York City, and in the middle of nowhere, all of a sudden, there's the Donald J. Trump State Park. And at first, I was like, what's with this guy? Like, there have been plenty of real estate billionaires before him that didn't feel the need to stamp their name all over everything. What's with this guy? But then I realized, like, okay, hold on. At some point, he must have realized that what makes him happy or what he wants is to have his name on things. So he'll probably even lose money in a deal to make sure that he's the one that gets his name on it. Like, he could have let Pepsi put their name on it and make more money, but no, he wants his name on it and he'll make less money. And so at least he's kind of optimized for that, right? So say if one of your listeners here, like, is really focused on money, fine, then just admit it and optimize for it. And if that's what makes you happy, then of course people are going to tell you that you're wrong and you shouldn't do that. But no, if that's what you want, you can optimize for it. So for me, my choice was freedom, that I always made the choice that gave me more freedom at any point, like multiple times a day, when deciding how to set up my business, where to set it up, how to set up like the internals and whatnot. It was always like, well, which decision would give me more freedom to do whatever the hell I want, whenever I want, and disappear for months if I want, or sit there all day and read a book if I want. That was my choice. And so along the way, of course, there were people telling me that I could be doing it better. I could be optimizing my business for profitability and what's my gross percentage of return based on something something per square foot. And I'd say, I don't care. Like, I'm happy. I'm doing it this way. So I think it came more from that. It just made me realize early on, like, the reason I'm doing this is, for one, it's a hobby. It makes me happy. And it just happened to grow larger than I expected. But for two, it's like I make my decisions based on freedom. So.
Definitely. So, and interestingly enough, I find a lot of people, some are driven by money, but most that at least are folks and friends around my site, it's really is more about meaning, but they think that they should be focused on all of these other elements. So it's refreshing. It's refreshing to hear that voice. And I was so happy to hear somebody else besides myself trumpet the same philosophy. Whew, you helped me out with that. Well, but so given some of the different stages of growth, you did start out doing everything yourself, as you described. As the business grew, and perhaps because of having the values of freedom and being happy, being stretched by, working so hard in so many hours, you did do specific things in order to delegate a lot more work, bring a great team of people in, classic things that you do when you're really trying to grow your business and get out of the day-to-day details. How did you go through that experience, and what were some of the challenges and benefits of that?
I think that was probably one of the hardest things, especially for a small business founder, entrepreneur, somebody that, if you're used to doing everything yourself, learning to delegate is so damn hard because it's learning to let go a bit. You're used to kind of being a perfectionist and doing everything yourself, and all of a sudden letting somebody else do it and not micromanaging and just letting them do it, you really gotta kind of step back and trust. It's like, got to learn the, to me, the magic words were good enough. It's like, yes, I could step in and maybe with hours of work do it a little better than them, but you know what? somebody else is doing it and it's good enough, so just let it go. The stuff I did that was more systematized is I realized around my fourth year after starting the company that I was trapped. Talk about, making the freedom choice. I was trapped. It's like there's so many things in that company that didn't run unless I was there. If I went away for a week, everything fell to pieces, So realizing I was trapped and always wanting to make the freedom choice, I found a way. I just started teaching everybody else, not one person, but I taught everybody how to do everything I was doing so that if anything was still my responsibility, say like even the bookkeeping or going into the bank account and doing the payroll or something, I'd say, okay, this sucks that this is still a me only kind of thing. So let me show everybody how to do it. So I would actually gather around like a few people and say, let me show you how to do this stuff. And I walked them through it, and then I'd make it somebody's job to document it. I'd say, okay, write down everything I'm telling you, okay? And somebody would watch as I'd do it, and they'd document it. And I'd even make sure that you communicate the philosophies behind what you're doing so that instead of having to dictate every tiny little decision, if you're dictating the philosophies behind what you're doing, like this is why we do this, this is why I do this, this is why I respond to emails in this fashion. Then it helps the people that you're teaching kind of make decisions along those lines by themselves in the future. So I just kind of kept doing that and kept doing that until eventually I wasn't needed at all for the operation of my company. The whole company just ran without me. And that's when the business really started to take off, because once I was free to put my time into improving the business instead of just maintaining it, things really improved. So, what I did around this time, just as a symbolic move, my girlfriend had moved to Los Angeles, even though the business was up in Portland, Oregon. So, just kind of symbolically, I was like, you know what? I think I am really not needed to the day-to-day things here. I'm going to prove it. So, I said, all right, everybody, I'm moving to LA. Good luck. Let me know if you need help. And honestly, for the next 4 years, the business, quadrupled in size while I was gone. It went from like 20 million in sales to 80 million in sales while I was gone in those 4 years, and went from 20 employees to 80 employees. And that was all while I was in Los Angeles. And so, granted, I was still involved in the company and I was available by email and phone, but most of what I was doing was spending my time kind of programming and improving the new services that the site would offer, whereas the actual operations of the existing business were taken care of by everybody else.
Yeah, kind of humbling, isn't it? You can worry, oh my God, what's going to happen when I leave? And then you're like, wow, it actually is better when I'm not around. That's.
Oh, it was so awesome. And especially in Los Angeles, which is such a kind of everybody's a freelancer kind of town, so many people in LA were saying, but who's running your business? And I'd say, well, my business runs my business. They're like, well, no, who's in charge up there? I'd say, well, it's not any one person. I made it a system that works. So even if anybody up there were to just quit tomorrow, anybody else could step into their shoes. It just works. There's if you're interested in this stuff, there's an amazing book on it called E-Myth Revisited. So E-MYTH Revisited by, I think it's Michael Gerber.
Michael
It's a
Gerber, yep.
Brilliant book on like how to get into this systematized kind of mindset of turning your business into a system instead of having it just be something that requires your own two hands.
Yeah, and what I found in my own experience, just with my own business and with a lot of clients, is it's often a point where then you realize that you really want to put that in place. As you said, when you started, it's what I fondly just call your side hustle, right? Just something to do, kind of to be helpful and sell your own things, but then you do get to a stage where you realize this is really worth it, and it's growing, and I want to maintain the value on freedom and happiness. So when and why did you decide to sell it?
So after 10 years, I was feeling done. It mostly started with the fact that I had rewritten, sorry, I rewrote the software start to finish. Over 10 years of CD Baby, I didn't really know how to program when I began. But over 10 years, I had learned a lot about programming, but the computer code behind CD Baby was like a big spaghetti mess, right? So after 10 years, I said, okay, give me a clean slate. I'm going to rewrite this software start to finish. And I did. And Pam, it is like the most beautiful thing I have ever done. It was like the culmination of everything I ever learned with programming. It was so well done. It was so beautiful. And I did it. So I guess that was, let me think, a little before Christmas 2007. So 10 years after starting the company, it was launched with this new kind of version 2.0 code, and it worked amazingly well. And we had this great Christmas season, and everything went really well. And so then it was January, and I was kind of feeling like, so now what? And I kind of could try to invent things that the business could do. Okay, maybe now we will be multi-currency. We'll set up different warehouses around the world. But everything I thought of, I felt a little kind of, that'd be a lot of work, and I'm not that excited about that. And then I thought about it and realized that what had happened is kind of like a painter or a sculptor that works on a single painting or a sculpture for years. I think I had kind of put my final brushstroke on it, and I just kind of sat back and looked at everything that the business was, and I was feeling done. I was like, yeah, that's it. Like, I have no future vision for this. This is kind of beyond anything I ever thought it would be. So, you mentioned Seth Godin at the beginning of this call, and now my publisher. He's always been an occasional mentor to me. So I called him up and I explained the situation, and he said, if you care, you need to sell. Meaning, like, if you're feeling done with your business, like, I can assure you that your clients, those musicians, are not feeling done. And you're actually doing them a disservice by remaining at the helm of this company. You should sell if you care about them. And I was like, whoa, I never thought I would sell my company. Like, I thought this was just something I was going to do until I die. Yeah, I just kind of, I updated my mindset, and I realized that, yeah, I was done. It was time to let go. And that is hard. Selling your company is kind of like graduating and getting a divorce at the same time.
I was just thinking about the divorce analogy and like letting
Yeah.
your kid go off to college and like every
Yes.
heart-wrenching thing that could happen in someone's life.
Yeah, it is like all that wrapped into one. It is so tough. And the stuff I won't get into too much because it just gets really ugly. So like the last year and a half I was at CD Baby, I really I got very bad at managing people. Let's just say I think the culture of the company changed in that last kind of year and a half while I was away. In fact, the 4 years I was down in Los Angeles, everything was fine. It was actually after I came back, and then like somewhere around there, it's like the culture of the company internally just got so bad that it was really irreversible. Like a couple, what do you call it? Like rotten eggs spoil the basket, the barrel, or whatever the saying is. And the culture of the company internally had gotten so bad and so far from what I wanted it to be that I felt that my options were either to kind of like fire everybody and start all over again, or just kind of walk away. And so in a way, it's like selling the company was definitely a bit of a failure on my part. It was like things got so bad I had to sell. But so it was kind of bittersweet when people would say congratulations afterwards. I'm like, no, like it's not congratulations. I had to sell my baby. Like this is bad. It's just, I think anybody at a certain point when you're, no matter what endeavor you've taken on, at a certain point you'll feel when it's time to walk away. Like you'll get that feeling of when you're done, whether it's like you hate going into the office even though it's your office, or you just have no future vision left for it, or you're just feeling like it's too tough and you see no way out and you don't even really care about a way out. At a certain point, you'll just know that you're done. And then you got to have the courage to admit that you're done and let somebody else take it, and kind of like selling your house. It's not just because you lived there for 10 years doesn't mean that it's only yours. It's like somebody else can live here now and make it their dream house.
Well, and what's interesting, just listening to you talk about that, is there are kind of two things happening. One really was an internal process for you as a human, right? With your path and what you wanted to do in the world and deciding, that you were ready for new things and you weren't as excited because you were through with the work. And then sometimes conveniently and annoyingly, you know, situations come up that can help you along in that decision, which sounds like it was a hard help, you know, where the culture was totally falling apart. And I could see where that you could feel, you know, like not wanting to walk away from it in that particular set of conditions. But I just find it more common, you know, more common than not. It's hard to get that perfect configuration where everything is just perfect the way that you want it. You know, I know at different stages of my life, similar things have happened. You know, I've walked away when I didn't feel like it was the perfect kind of wrap up, but I think that's an illusion, if that makes you feel any better.
True.
So, and what are you doing now? What have you been doing since?
Well, literally the day after I sold CD Baby, actually no, the day after I had an agreement to sell CD Baby, like 8 months before it was done, but the next day, literally, I set up my next company called Muckwork. I registered the domains, I incorporated the set up the corporation, spent a few months programming and coding. I even like hired a manager, and a few months into it, I said, "What the hell am I doing?" Like, I was supposed to, like, I wanted to change the trajectory of my life. I didn't want to just take off the CD Baby title on my forehead and put on the Muckwork title. Like, you know, nothing's going to change in my life if I just keep on like this. So I forced myself to stop for the first time in my life. I've always just been a workaholic. For the first time in my life, I made myself stop and decided to take a sabbatical. And I went around the world. I learned how to scuba dive in an Arctic lake in Iceland. I spent a month going around India. What else did I do? I don't know. I moved to New York City, met this amazing woman. We got married. On our second date, I said, "How'd you like to live in the rest of the world for the rest of your life?" And she said, "Okay." And so 2 days after we got married, we grabbed a carry-on bag each and spent a year going around the world looking for a new country to call home. And we went down to Brazil and up to Sweden and lots of places in between, and we ended up in Singapore. So moved to Singapore a few months ago, and in the meantime, in this couple years of sabbatical, I read pretty much every business and psychology book I'd always wanted to read, and not just read, but really took very detailed notes. It's something that I love, is to really internalize what I'm reading, to not just quickly read it and go, "Eh, it was good," but to, like, no, really get the wisdom and knowledge out of this and memorize it. So if any of your listeners go to my website, there's a link at the top that says books, and actually I've posted my full notes from every book I've read, so you can kind of get my Cliff's notes. Well, I guess it'd be Derek's notes version. And yeah, now 3 years later, after 3 years of sabbatical, I've finally set up Muckwork again. So right now I'm doing the programming behind my next company called Muckwork.
That's awesome. Well, now it all makes sense. The girl pie on Twitter said about you, "He's swell. Ask if his terrific book summary annotations will increase frequency. I'd pay for a subscription." So maybe you have a new little side hustle once you set up Muckworks. Well, there are so many great stories, including how you made a $3.3 million mistake in your business, and a lot of other really great anecdotes, and it just really grounded, wise advice and anti-advice, as you said before in the book. So I really, really enjoyed it. I think folks will as well. It's an easy thing to read, a perfect summer beach read if you're heading off somewhere where it's warm and tropical. And if you want to find Derek, you can find him at sivers.org. That's SIVERS.org. And his brand new book, Anything You Want, is coming out today from the Domino Project, available on Amazon. So, Derek, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I really enjoyed it and hope we can cross paths sometime soon.
Yeah, thanks, Pam. I appreciate it.
Thanks.